Hey guys, it's Nisha from Did You Have To? And so here's what happened. For the second year, the Bowaido Geek community is rallying to support the life-saving mission of St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, finding cures, saving children. Throughout the month of October, we are fundraising for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital so that all kids can enjoy the spookiness of Halloween without the scariness of childhood cancer. Donate now at stjude.org/Bowaido. So Here's What Happened is a proud member of the But Why Though podcast community. Hey y'all, welcome to another episode of So Here's What Happened. I am your host, Nisha, joined by my lovely co-host,
Carolyn. What's up?
What's up? We are back again and it is spooky season, which is nice. that's all I have to say.
Except for the Candy Crush. I'm missing Candy Crush. What's it called now? Candy Corn?
Yes, the candy corn.
Demon candy?
Mm-hmm. The triangle. You mean Satan's candy? The devil's candy?
made from the tears of some kind of demon. Like, yes. Candy corn is the evil most.
Yes, I hate it with every fiber in my being, as everyone should know by now, but as y'all also may know or have seen at this point, at the time this episode is out, y'all know that our fundraiser for St. Jude Play Live is going on for the St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. So if you would like to see me suffer and eat candy corn, you could do that for $15. So that's still not
great.
I know. I'm doing it for the kids, but I do this because I love the children, and apparently y'all love to see me suffer because I can't stand it. It's too sweet. Like, I don't know how to describe it. It's essentially compacted sugar in the shape of corn, but it's like,
but then it's still not like it's not like a good kind of sweet. It's just awful. I say it tastes like depression and hopes and dreams deferred.
Yes, because I'm like, it's not like a Gushers, it's not like a Twizzler, it's not sweet like you know, a sour candy. Like, I like sour candy. Like, give me an Airhead, like things like that. But nonetheless, this is a podcast about candy. So let's get right into it. So we're gonna switch things up a little bit because as we felt, September went by it like a blur, but it also felt like it was a year ago at this point. But we did still want to talk about one of our favorite films that came out during that time period, and that is Shang-Chi. And it's the full title is Shang-Chi, Legend of the Ten Rings, correct?
Yeah, and the Legend of the Ten Rings.
And the Legend, yes. So I will hand it over to Carolyn if she wants to, like, just give the details of the director and all that good info.
Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings was directed by Destin Daniel Cretton with story by Dave Callahan and Cretton. It stars Simu Liu as the protagonist, Shang-Chi, Awkwafina, and E. Norlun as his best friend Katie, or so I heard because I haven't seen it, and Tony Leung as Mandarin or Xu Wei, Fa La Shen as Li Ko Wu, Meng Er Zhang as Xi Liang, Michelle Yeoh as Yang Nan, and Florian Montenu as Razor Fist. And then it's like a whole big cast. So like those are just the top listed one, but there's like way more people. There's like Benedict Wong as Wong. And then Andy Le as Death Dealer.
Nice. Well, I just want to start off and ask you, like, so first impressions when we heard that we were getting this movie, what were yours?
I was actually interested into it because, like, you know, I'm not really a comic person, but I had known of Shang-Chi, but I didn't know, like, the whole Legend stuff. I even went to, like, the comic book store and I got, like, a couple issues and I read them. But then, like, I will admit, I kind of lost interest because comics really aren't my thing.
Yeah.
So, but I did kind of just want, like, a cursory knowledge of it. And I was happy, like for everybody, like, to have, like, an Asian-centered Marvel film. So I'm like, yes, you get, like, proper Asian representation. And I was thinking not only just Asian, because like you have to remember there's Asian and there's Asian American. And then but the thing is like and like the thing but the thing with the film and like the thing about how it was being promoted is like people thought it was Asian American. I'm like, which Asian Americans? Because this is predominantly Chinese culture. This is predominantly Chinese American culture. Like Asian America, like you have to like consider there's Southeast Asian, South Asian, and you know there's Vietnamese, Thai, Taiwanese, South Korean, Japanese. These are all fall under the umbrella of Asian. So like, but the film isn't necessarily about all Asians. It's predominantly, from my understanding, from what I've seen and from talking to people, predominantly Chinese and Chinese American culture. Yeah, that out of the way. But people were like happy. People were like, yes, we finally have a Marvel film directed by Asian American, starring Asian Americans and starring Asians. From like, especially from like, you have like Tony Leung and Michelle Yeoh, who are like, we know, amazing like Chinese and Hong Kong performers. And Michelle Yeoh actually is not. Michelle Yeoh is actually Malaysian. So we have that representation in there too. But I think it's like really good. I was all excited for my friends. Are like, yes, we're finna get a representation. I'm like, yes. And like the costumes are great, the cast is great. But what I thought was interesting in the film is like a lot of the conversation has mainly been about Tony Leung. And then there's the character, the Shang-Chi sister, who's the character played by Mara Zhang, Shelia. She's the one a lot of people have been talking about. So that you can give us all the details, that as much as we want to give about the film, because as I said, I haven't seen it, so you know, like cursory knowledge and from talking to people like Hugh and to others about the film. Let's get into it, Nisha.
Yeah, so I can get into it. So kind of like similar to you, I was excited about it because like, oh yeah, no, this is a big deal for representation, because I felt like very much like how Black Panther for us was like, this is a great moment because finally you have like, you know, like you said, you have a Chinese director, you have like this amazing cast that allows all this representation, and it's like it does all of these things, and it make and I feel like, oh, this is great because I love when other people get the representation that they deserve. Because I, yeah, no, we got to feel this way when Black Panther came out, so it was like, this is awesome. I definitely was like, I don't know nothing about Shang-Chi. I have not like I don't read comics that intense like that. I read comics from time to time, but my biggest problem with comics, because and like this is why I love manga more, is because manga are easier to follow. I'm never gonna have to go read a one series that crossovers with another series in a manga. Manga is comprehensive and it's one franchise, and it's not to say that that's a bad thing when it comes to like American, like Western comics specifically. However, for me, it kind of irritates me when it becomes so embedded in the characters that I can't even tell. Like, it's like the Justice League. You got to read Wonder Woman volumes 1 through 7, but then, oh, she's going to go and the story is going to continue in Justice League volume 58. I'm like, I don't even know what happened in the first 57 volumes.
That's also my problem with comics. Like, there's so many crossovers, so many variants, so many storylines, so many volumes and editions, special editions, and all these things to keep track of. I'm like, and like growing back up, growing up back home in Barbados, like comics were expensive. Like, I had comics, but like I couldn't really get into them because they were expensive. And my mom was like, we ain't got the kind of money to be spending on these comics. And then it's like, you gotta be spending like so much money to like keep track of just like one storyline or one. You have X-Men, but then you have like X-Men crossovers. But can't keep track of. So like kudos to anyone, to all my fellow comic nerds who are able to like keep track of all that stuff, because you guys, like your knowledge, your
It's a
brain. I
lot. I
can't.
mean, and granted, I know there are some runs where like the stories are contained and it's just in that run for like that artist and writer and that series or whatever that they're doing for the character. But then I'm just like, I don't know where to start, so I get confused. But nonetheless, getting back on track for the film, I think it was very good. The story, again, because this for me is a branch, it's branch. When I think of Marvel and the MCU, like I think of it as almost like a tree where like you have so many different parts. You have space, you have Earth, you have aliens, and then you have like gods, and then you have like all these different things. So then Shang-Chi kind of like branches off into a new like territory, because you know, a story that has been told before, we haven't touched this area with like these characters before, and they like in the lore that's with Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. Like, there's lore there in the MCU that hasn't been like seen before, or if it's been seen, we haven't like gotten it in this like, yeah, it to the attention that we did now, because obviously like having Wong like be a little cameo in the film, like that was great. And it's just like, oh wait, now does that mean Wong has some kind of connection to Shang-Chi's story, like somewhere in the like, you know, it branches off other things and other theories and all that. But getting to the story, I would say in the story and like my take on it overall, I would say the cast did a great job overall. I think I was most impressed with, I'm sorry, you said her name, the actress who plays
Marta?
Yes, her. I was very, very impressed with her performance, and like her character. Like, I'm very much excited to see her again in the MCU. Simu Liu, I think he does a great job as a leading man in this film, because, you know, I feel like I've only seen him in maybe 1 to 2 films, and then Kim's Convenience. I have not seen him be a leading man in a film like this before, and that's what, yeah, kind of that's what impressed me. I'm like, okay, this is good for like his first like big major action hero role. And I think, given more time, and I look forward to seeing, like, you know, more of his work in the role. I will say, I just always think of him as being like comedic, like he is Jung on Kim's Convenience, but he was able to very much do those very emotional and then high action moments in the film. So he does, I think he does a pretty good job as Shang-Chi. Awkwafina, I, like many other people who have already talked about their, I don't want to say grievances or whatever with Awkwafina when it comes to her acting. It's not that I don't think I think she's a bad actor. I just feel like it's the black scent for me.
It's the black scent for me too. And also, like, to me, she honestly really isn't that good of an actress, because like people are talking about, oh, she got all these accolades for The Fear. And I'm like, she gave the least impressive performance in that entire film.
Right. I think the black scent is not as heavy as it was like when we saw Crazy Rich Asians, which I will say is an improvement. I definitely applaud, I can't remember who the journalist was who basically called her out on the black scent during the interviews for the press tour for Shang-Chi. What'd you say?
Yeah, but they should have pressed her more, because that answer she gave was...
Oh, that answer was, you know...
passive aggressive as hell, because you could tell she was angry. And if the journalist should have pressed her, just like you're not gonna, I would have been like, so you're not gonna expand on this? No, but you know, at least the answer, because it's been like, what, 3 years, and this is the first time anyone has ever asked her about that.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's just like, it's one of those things where I'm like, I can believe that people can change and grow beyond those things. But like when I see it, I'm just like, I feel like I'm a harsh critic of like that when it comes to her. So I'm like, at the slightest hint of it, I'm just like, I'd be looking for it. So I don't think she did it much here. But for me, it's just like, that's my first interpretation, like my first reaction with her when she's in a piece. And I hate to say that, but I'm like, you know, I look forward to seeing when she's completely done with that. And maybe there'll be a piece, like a film, where I won't feel that way about her anymore. But
we shall see.
We shall see. Florian Montenu is Florian Montenu, which is, he showed up to be beefy, handsome, and, you know, an action villain. That's all. He understood the assignment.
I guess he did. But he kind of did. Well, I think he's not a bad actor, because like he was in Creed 2, and he was actually really impressive with Creed. And a lot of people were like, I think apart from like the main plot and everything, like he was, I think, the most impressive thing about Creed 2, because like, people were like, whoa, who's this guy? Mm-hmm. Like, he did a pretty darn good job.
For someone who doesn't have that many lines, like outspoken lines, Florian Montenegro knows how to command a room with his facial expressions. And I will forever be impressed with his performance in Creed, because I'm like, you told his entire story with your facial expressions and a few lines, and you made me feel for your character.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just, and you know, he gets to be a little bit of a comedic relief here in this film, which I think is also kind of different, again, because this is now the second piece that I've seen him in. Other performances, Michelle Yao. There is nothing else to be said. She's flawless. She's amazing. She's the blueprint. She does the thing. Fight choreography, loved it. Loved it all. I want more of it. So like, this is like, if this is what we can come to expect when we have like Shang-Chi's, you know, that branch of the MCU, I look forward to seeing more fight choreography. I love like old school, because we've talked about it. We both are fans of old school kung fu movies. Yep. And I would love to see more of that. Like, you know, the fighting, the hand-to-hand combats, like they're doing some amazing stunts, especially like when there's the scenes where like they are fighting on bamboo stalks that are on the side of the building. And like, just like the, like, obviously, I know there's stunts people involved and there have to be wires, but again, it's amazing. And I think they did a great job. But yeah, I think overall, I highly recommend people to go see it. One, if you feel comfortable enough going to a theater, but I'm pretty sure this will be on Disney Plus and, you know, maybe by New Year's. I could see them putting it out there on by New Year's.
It would should have been out by now, but you know,
the whole Scarlett Johansson thing is kind of like why they didn't go through with releasing it. So they've not, I don't think we're going to get any more movies released for on Premier Access, unfortunately. That's just my, well, Premier Access. Yeah. Or I think Premier Access is just going to be something that you get maybe 3 months after a theatrical release. Like that's just my prediction when it comes to, after watching what happened with Scarlett Johansson's lawsuit.
Well, I won't be seeing it until it's on Disney Streaming Plus, because I said I am not going to pay to watch that for particular reasons, which we have not mentioned, but
yeah,
stuff involving the main actor. And also, because I'm feeling petty about it too. And like, I'm not sure if I mentioned it here since then, but like, I had COVID, so like, I'm hesitant to attend the cinema in general. And when for TIFF, the only thing that I saw in the theater was Hellbound, which is a South Korean drama. And like, it's directed by one of my favorite directors, Yeon Sang-ho, who did Train to Busan, which is my all-time favorite movie. And I'm like, only me and six other people are inside that entire theater. Mm-hmm. Everyone was masked, everyone. That was the only reason I watched it. And I'm like, this is it. That's my one exception. Other than that, no.
It's the way I literally cannot pull myself to go to theaters like I used to go. Like, I used to be like, yeah, I'll go for an afternoon showing. Now it's like, only way I'm going is if it's in the smallest theater and it's not packed. And like, I will wait until the last minute to buy my ticket to see how many people are in there. Mm-hmm. And that is how I will go. But I'm like, I'm not going. It's far and few between, because it's, yeah. I just, you know, it just depends on how, like, what everybody's safety is. Like, what are you comfortable with? Because yes, people better be wearing their mask the entire time. But at the same time, I can't see what the person behind me, in front of me, or to the side of me is doing. So
exactly. And like, there are people eating, and like, you can be eating if you have a mask. So if you're eating, that means you don't have your mask on, which is like, no, you're defeating the entire purpose.
I know, but it is the state of where we are at right now, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So until that changes, or until like these studios get a better way for us to access and watch things, I mean, shoot, I would pay for a one-time viewing for $15. I think that's reasonable, because that's what I would pay for a theater. I don't know why that can't be replicated.
For the streaming services, they're charging $30.
They want to charge $30. I know it's madness, because I think about it from like, you know, from a business side of things, they definitely are like, okay,
they don't minimum. Need that money. They don't need. They can't afford to. They can afford to charge $5
because they don't care. Got
their money triplicate. Subscriptions and everything else. Like,
they don't care. They don't care about like what's affordable for us. They're gonna charge what they believe people are willing to pay. That's what it comes down to at the end of the day. If they say 30 and people pay 30, they won't make it lower than that.
I'll be forever bitter.
I know.
Forever bitter that I paid to see that Black Widow movie.
That is why I sent the collection plate around to everybody in the room. I was like, we will watch it if everybody puts $6 in this plate. Because I am not paying $30 myself.
I'm so bitter about that. I'll be forever
Yeah.
bitter.
But anyways, moving on to the next topics because we have some dramas to talk about, some TV shows. I'm excited. So as y'all have probably watched by now, if y'all haven't, y'all should, and we're going to tell you why, Squid Game, or as some of us have been calling it, Squid Games.
Which I don't know why, because there's no S there.
Because, and I'm going to talk about my family right now. It's like, I feel like it's just a small portion of the Black people who put just add S at the end of it. Squid
No,
Games.
it's not. It's I don't. That's a Black thing, because Black West Indians do the same. We put S at the end of things, like for no reason at all.
That's everyone who says Squid Games. But anyways, yes, so let's talk about Squid Game because, whoo, what a game it is.
Very extremely popular show that has been sweeping the globe, and it is written and directed by Hwang Dong-yuk, stars Lee Jong-ae and Park Hae-soo as the two main characters. And in the ensemble, because this is a very big ensemble cast, you have Oh Young-soo as Oh Na Oh In-nam, Jung Ho-yeon as Kang Se-byuk, Ho Sung-tae as Jang Duk-soo, Kim Ju-rang as Han Min-yeol, and Chulapati Anupam as Ali Abdul. So this drama is so it's good. I do have issues with it, but we will get into that a little bit. But I will let Lanisha start off with this because this was her choice to discuss. So Nisha, let's start the game.
No, let's not start this game. No,
So we're not gonna start the game. Okay, let's start the
no, I'm kidding. But yeah, no, we'll get into it. So yeah, no, the series centers on a contest where 456 players drawn from different walks of life, but each deeply in debt, play a set of children's games with deadly consequences for losing for a chance to win $45.6 billion prize,
Hmm.
which the dollar is in the Korean
One, so it's gone,
won.
it's different. So
Yeah,
the
won. So, and yeah, so that's the premise. I won't go into too deeply because I feel like there's just like Carolyn said, this is a massive cast, and it's just very impressive of how the show does so well with pacing, where like of the main cast that we do see, how we see their walks of life, and then we're taken from like their walks of life into putting them into the game. So yeah, I watched this. I binged it in 2 days. It's so good. Like the premise is wild. I to take something like children's games, like red light, green light. I think I will forever associate red light, green light with this show. Because before it was an innocent child game. Now it's a game where if you move on red, you get shot and you dead. So, I was very intrigued by the show. I was told about it from like a few different people, and I kept seeing it like circulating on Twitter. Like people kept talking about it. I think since it came out, like the last 2 weeks maybe, people have just been talking about this show. And I was like, all right, I'm gonna start it. Carolyn, I did not know what I was in store for. That first episode, girl, I screamed. It's wild. I just feel like this is a really great show. I thought as far as it goes, like I think it's got plenty of action for it to be like a survival show, and then like there's the drama side of things. And then I'm very impressed with how the creator of it, like the writer, like how it's like how they tell the story. Like I really had a hard time of who I was rooting for, because like there is the main character who we all should be rooting for. However, I had other characters that I was rooting for much more than him, and I
But
was fine.
that's the thing, he's not met like Song Gi-hun, who's the lead character played by Lee Jong-ae, Lee Jong-jae, like he's not meant to be a sympathetic character. He's
Right.
not. He's a
He's
jerk
not.
from beginning right up until the end of the film, the show. Like he only redeems himself, I would say, in the last 5 minutes of the show. Because He's a fraud. He's a swindler. Like he was a jerk to his mother. He was selfish. He only cared about himself. Like he, you know, and like mm-hmm. he was a gambler. Like he was a gambling addict. Everything he did was about to supporting his habit. He didn't want to work properly because he would rather like waste the day doing nothing.
Yeah.
All of these people are like that. That's the whole point of it. And like no one is meant to be sympathetic except I would say Jung Ho Hyung, whose character Kang Se-byuk, and Ali played, as I said, played by Anupam, and it's like everyone else is a douche, but like they do have their own motivations. Like one of the characters, Han Min-yo, she actually, I think, like she was misunderstood because like she seems like this extremely harsh woman and she's mean to other women, but I think her character is a discussion of how like kind of like almost like a type of internalized misogyny,
right?
And then when you look at South, and but then when you also have to consider South Korean culture, like it's a very conservative culture, it's also very patriarchal, it's very male dominated, and like women have to kind of like find ways to survive. Like she was a pro at playing the game because she had to learn how to play the game in real life. She had to learn how to play the game by men's rules, right? And that's something a lot of people are not picking up on. And her thing is like education, and this is something I want to go in a bit. And like there was a discussion of talking about the subtitles and the closed captioning. So like and it's not only South Korean. If you watch any show on Netflix, any film on Netflix that is not originally in English, and you watch this and you turn on the subtitles suck. Like they're not that accurate. And I'm not blaming the subtitlers, like the people whose job it is to type them. You have to blame the script writers and you have to blame Netflix, because Netflix is in charge. Like whoever's in their quality control department does not apparently care enough to make sure that all of their subtitles are accurate. And part of the reason for that is like they have so much content, all they care about is acquiring as much content as possible and sending it out as quickly as possible. They're not doing any quality control on the subtitles, so like you have inaccurate subtitles, one, and then when you have inaccurate subtitles, when you're talking about specific cultures like South Korea or a lot of Asian cultures, there's nuances to the way they speak. There's nuances to the things that they say, a lot of context. So like even for her character, Hamyeon, like there's a lot of things that she says in Korean that gives you an idea of how much she, like how her being poor affected her not being educated. As in fact, she wasn't able to afford to go to like a prestigious high school or go to a prestigious university. But she's street smart, right? She's very smart, but she's not book smart, which in like South Korea, education is everything. Like where you go to school, like you know what you study, a lot of that determines how people see you, right? So that's something that is lost in translation, right? Because like the subtitles don't convey that, so a lot of people read her wrong and read a lot of the characters wrong. I think like there was a discussion today the day we recorded, it's like someone was talking about Ali, so like the way that he refers to Sang-woo, he says Sejanim, which is kind of like a referral to something that you call somebody, usually a man who has a higher position than you, who has like, you know, a seniority position that over you, and that's cultural. And like there are people that are saying, oh, it's like him being sniveling and him being like subjugated. And I'm like, nah, it's a cultural. That's just how they speak. Like there's honorifics. Like in Chinese and Japanese, there's honorifics, so I refer to people. South Korea has the same thing. There's like nim, which is what you use to add on like a level of seniority and respect to a person's title. Then there's like hyung, which is how you refer to a man older than you that you're close to. And like there's nuances to these things, and because you don't get that in the translation, you miss it. So like they would put someone's name. The character is not calling the person by their name. They're calling them by the title that they refer to them as, which has a lot of meaning, but you don't get that. So like when you're talking about things like Squid Game, and that's the thing, this show has blown up so much. I'm like, but you people are looking at it from a very American perspective, and you're not interested in learning the context or the history and the references made in this show. And it bugs me, but we're going to go past that because that's a whole long discussion.
No, but, I know. Because I just really quick on the subtitles, like, because I even made a tweet about it and I pointed it out, because it's like, yeah, the issue isn't with like anyone involved, I think, with the studio or the show, it definitely comes down to the platform, because it's like, we can't yell at the people who translated, you know, the script and like the dub that we're hearing, because they probably were involved in like working together with the script writers and the translations and all that. So when Netflix gets it, you know, or like however it works, because again,
Netflix is responsible for hiring the translators for the subtitles. They're responsible for hiring the translators for the closed captioning, which is different to subtitles. And they're responsible for hiring the dubbers, who are the voiceover actors that do the like the American or German or Spanish or whatever language version that they're doing apart from the original. So that's all. All of these inconsistencies lie squarely at Netflix's feet. And I say this, and I say this with confidence, because I watch, you know, I watch dramas on other streaming platforms like Viki, and then there's WeTV. And when you look at the, if Netflix, I can guarantee you, if Netflix was to be, if this show was to be subbed on like a platform like Viki, you would see the difference in the subtitles immediately, because Viki's subtitlers do an excellent job of doing subtitles for the shows and the films that they do.
And that was the point I was going to get to, is just that, like, when I look, so the example I have is like when I watch anime, and when I watch subbed and when I watch dubbed anime, I, for example, will watch on Funimation has their English voice dub cast that they hire to dub the scenes and everything that's already been created by the studio. So like when these properties are all working together and quality control is in place, then of course the subtitles are going to match the dub. And then it's like, so like when, again, like, because I very similar to you, it's like going back to the other thing about people who were kind of like only seeing it from their perspective, especially with Ali's character, and I just like, y'all not getting it. Cause like I have some experience again with like understanding, there's honorifics in certain languages. And because that's going to be in those translations, you're going to think, oh, this is messed up that they had this character saying that. I'm like, actually, no, that's the culture. This matches with what he's saying because of like the culture and where they're at. So it's just, I just wish people would just not reach so hard. But I do, going back to the other thing, I would like to see, like, in the future, because Netflix has a lot of international dramas, just a better job with quality control when it comes to this kind of stuff. Just because, like, it's not, I just feel like the differences between what's being said out loud should not be so glaringly different between what is in the subtitles, because that's the issue. It's one thing if it's one word and it's just like a small change, like maybe they said an instead of like a, like, you know, something like that. It's another thing when you've rephrased the entire sentence, and then you've had like people who are fluent in Korean commenting on this online, literally saying like, what is being said in the subtitles is not the same thing as what she just said. So it's literally not conveying, like, just like what you said, it's lost in translation completely, and it's not being conveyed correctly. But yeah, I'm glad we got that one out of the way, because that was definitely something that annoyed me with this. And it's, again, it's not a reflection on the show itself. It's definitely something about the platform that it's on. I guess, who was your favorite character?
Ali. I really liked Ali. And like, I do have a lot of the reason why I like Ali is because of the character of who he's played by. Like, I think Anupam did an extremely good job of like giving him like a lot of like heart and a lot of emotion, and that he connects to the audience. And like, this isn't the first drama I've seen him in before. Actually, I've seen him in a couple dramas he's had. Like small bit parts in shows like Descendants of the Sun. Like, I love the trajectory of his career, because he started from like small background characters, like with no dialogue, like in Descendants of the Sun, and then in Between Lovers, he actually has speaking role. He had a speaking role in there, and he was a friend of one of the main characters' grandmother. Like, he had a really good close connection, and like he was her friend, and like, so like, to go see him like his career like just changed, and he's getting like a main supporting character role, I think that's amazing. And also, as I said, like, he like gives the character a lot of heart, but I do have problems with his characterization in that he's a bit too naive. And the reason I say this is that he trusted Sang-woo a bit too easily. Like the whole thing with giving him his marbles and then
Poof.
like not checking to make sure that the bag had the actual marbles. I thought that was, to me, a bit naive, and I mean, especially considering everything that he's seen happen in the show, in the game so far, he should have
Yeah.
been a bit more skeptical. You know what I mean? Like, I understand they're trying to say his character is nice because we saw like the scenes with his wife and his son, and we see that his naturally his personality is very nice, and he's very thoughtful. But then he's in this extremely dangerous setting. He's seen people get killed and slaughtered in front of his eyes. He's seen people betray each other. I thought him trusting Sang-woo, like, that was a bit too easy, and I
Yeah.
didn't like that. I didn't like that characterization of his writing of his character at all.
Yeah, 'cause I just feel like after like 3 days, so like four games by now y'all have played, I'm not trusting anybody. But to his own fault, it's like he was just too trusting. 'Cause like I think about even like there's the two characters where like they're a husband and a wife and they play together, and there's the marbles one. And obviously, like that's a completely different story that we didn't even get to see how that one went down. But it's like, bruh, people are dying. Like there is like, and you have to, and I get that, like I guess like the thing that it's not that I'm, because yes, I do agree that he is just like very, very trusting and too trusting to his own fault, which I guess is just it's a lesson in and of itself sometimes that you can't trust everyone. But then at the same time, I just think that like nobody literally sees what song like that Sang-woo is literally playing and using them. And I was just kind of like, fuck that. Like, and I'm just like, yo, none of you see that he's using you until like it took up until like the game. And I'm gonna call that game hopscotch because I don't know, it made me think of hopscotch, but it's the glass. They never gave it, I can't remember if they called it a game.
Name that was episode. You know what? If they did, I probably didn't pay attention because that was the worst episode of the entire show. That was one of the awful, horrendous white characters played by these can't act white men,
Ugh.
and I just wish I could forget that entire episode. I wish I could. It was so bad. They
I was
spoiled the
just,
entire episode.
the fact that we find out that the VIPs that are like betting and like, and I'm just like, please tell me that it's like this entire games are not just for these five white men.
Of course they were.
Please tell me it's not just, and I'm like, obviously it doesn't make me feel any better if it was like we found out that like, oh no, it's the top 1% around the world that are watching the game, but these are the VIPs that showed up to watch. Either way, I'm disgusted, but I'm just like, so y'all doing all this for the white man? This? What?
Yeah, I think that actually kind of speaks a lot to South Korean culture, in how a lot of companies are run by American companies, and then also like how America is a global, just like a global force that a lot of countries are trying and were doing their best to become on equal levels to.
Yeah.
I think that's a commentary on that, but I think it could have been done better. Where first they could have probably hired some white people that can act, but then again, I've never seen a white person in any Korean drama that can actually act. But I think the whole premise, I think that could have also been achieved if they had like the top 1% of South Korean society be there, like the chaebols, like they could have been involved. But
Yeah, and I
I
guess
wish
it's
I could
still
speak to
because
people
we
direct,
still
because I
have.
want to ask you about this, because it's just like, why? They just ruined the entire episode, and they legit took me out of it, because like once they made an appearance, I could not bite into the reality that I was watching anymore. Like, you could become in I became invested in the entire show, the characters and all that. Then they made an appearance, and I was like, well, I can't buy into this anymore, because they took me out of it completely.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I see your point, 'cause like maybe it is just like a commentary one. And then I guess I also think about like, was the creator just trying to make a point of just like, yeah, the most vilest person who would like seek joy from this could be white men.
Oh no, for sure. Because I think, and it's also about how white people and white men objectify people of color, and this isn't nothing that we haven't seen. This isn't nothing that we don't know that happens in real life. Like, there are white people go to Asian countries for sex tourism.
Right. Right.
For you know, for sexual exploitation, for things like that. These things do happen, and I believe that's a commentary on that. But again, these men are just horrible, horrible actors and gross. Because I hated the scene where the one white man got naked and he was telling the cop who is...
The undercover cop.
The cop played by Wee Jang-hoon. Oh my god, what's the name of the cop? But the car, I know the actor. That's Wee Ha-joon. And for some reason, why am I not seeing the character's Jun-ho? Name pop up? Wang Jun-ho, played by Wee Ha-joon. Like, that character, the cop, he was undercover, but not officially, because he was there, like, we found out, like, to get revenge and to find out what happened to his brother. But, like, this man is, like, telling him to perform oral sex on him, and he's like, I can. And, like, you know, it's basically forced coercion and using his position of over this person he believes works for the organization running the games. And it's just, like, it was just gross and unsettling. And I literally skipped through that scene because I'm like, gross.
Yeah, I'm glad, like, obviously, like, having watched through the scene, I'm glad that nothing came of it. Like, there was no, like he maneuvered his way out of it, and he got out of that situation.
And honestly, I'll tell you, that's actually one of the... I have never, not I'm actually thinking about it, never seen in any K-drama where you get a full... Like, we didn't get full frontal nudity, but we saw like, this whole man's body is naked back. And that's the first time I've ever seen this. Because in K-dramas and in any Asian drama, because their society is kind of is conservative, like, you would get, like, you know, like, smudging out. You know, like, how they would, like, blur the person is naked. But and you know that the actor isn't naked because you can tell that they're wearing, like, a nude color underwear or tights or something. This one, you know this old man is butt naked. And I'm just like, whoa. Okay, yeah. That's actually the first time I've ever seen that in a K-drama. That actually speaks a lot. And that's, I would just love to talk to the director about that because he made some interesting choices.
Right.
And no, that's interesting. Perfect because I do have problems with it, but.
Yeah. And, speaking of problems, and this isn't a problem I have with the show, it's a problem I have with people reaching. Because, you know, apparently it was going around on Twitter that people were comparing this, like saying how the creator copied Hunger Games. And I'm just going to say this real quick. First of all, if you got Hunger Games from this, you are reaching. You're friggin' doing Stretch Armstrong levels of reaching. Because here's the difference. Hunger Games takes place in a dystopian future where children are nominated to come and fight in a gladiator-esque battle to the death for the violent, like the 12 children chosen to fight to the death. This doesn't have that. Those children don't play games. These children are not shot or, like, you know, have a gun at their head if they make a mistake. They literally have to fight each other and they can get killed. So again, it would behoove people to stop saying what something is like if you have only watched The Hunger Games.
And I only watched something made by white people, because the closest comparison of this, which I would say is actually what the real inspiration is for, is Battle Royale, which is a Japanese film from 2000.
Right.
And Kwang Hyun-duk, he wrote the pitch. He wrote and pitched Squid Games in 2009, 9 years after Battle Royale came out. So, and also Hunger Games, the writer for Hunger Games, she basically lifted the entire premise of Battle
from
Royale.
From Battle Royale. And she basically...
about white people, so...
Right. She threw in Rue, and that was it.
So. And you know what's the interesting thing, too, is like before, and just before Squid Game started to get popular, people were comparing it to Parasite, which again, yes, a South Korean film, nowhere close at all in premise, concept, execution, characterizations, concept, nothing about it are similar. The only thing similar about them is they were created in South Korea, made by and starring South Koreans.
Oh my God. I just would like people to stop comparing things without like actual, like, okay, if you're going to make a comparison, make sure you know what the difference between a comparison and, you know, drawing things that are like, oh, this reminds you of something. It does not mean, just because something can remind you of something does not mean that the artist copied it. Because the fact that like people pulled Hunger Games, I was like, but anyways, so that's my, I don't know. I liked it overall. I'm excited for a second season. I was very furious.
Don't need a second season.
I mean,
we don't need a second season.
I'm excited for the second season only because of like, well, I guess I have to sit for a second season because he could not get on the plane. That's the only reason where I'm just like, I'm excited.
Okay. No, see, this is what I take this so personally because if you watch not just South Korean dramas, if you watch Asian dramas, you know one season is how they do it. This is standard. This is their culture. This is their tradition. The creators make a show. They do one season. They set it free and let it live and roam out and let it roam in the wild. Then they go on to create other stories. North Americans have this idea that everything must become serialized because they like you want a closed ending. You want a definite ending. Everything doesn't have to have a definite ending. As I told someone, use your imagination. You can either have it that he didn't turn back and he went on the plane and he went to his daughter, or he turned back to go and get revenge. Options. There doesn't need to be a second season. There doesn't need to be a second season.
And I'll wasn't tell you it what, announced?
So one of the reasons, because if they make, because people have been saying, they've been telling Netflix they want a second season. And you know how Netflix, you know why you know Netflix will force us to do it? Mm-hmm. Because why? Netflix is an American company, one. And who their main base is America. Yes, Netflix is global. It's a global platform. But the what's the word I'm looking for? The audience that they listen to the most are Americans, predominantly white Americans. And you got all these white celebrities saying, "Ooh," you got all these white people online saying, "Ooh, we must have a second season." What will Netflix do? They will force that man to create a second season. But guess what? That second season won't be anywhere near as good for a season because his heart won't be in it because he said he doesn't want to, right? He wrote this thing, 11 years ago. He never intended for the story to have a second season. He wrote this story 11 years ago knowing exactly how it would end. And he executed it the way he wanted it to. But now people are like, "Oh, forget what you want. We want it. So we're going to have it." But then if he does write it, he's going to write it to appease an American audience, to suit an American audience. And mm-hmm. then it won't be the Squid Games that you want. It won't be the Squid Games that you have now. It will be something completely different. It will be this corrupted version of the original. And this is my problem with North. And this is one of the reasons I haven't watched a lot of North American productions, is because they take a story and they drag it to death. They drag it to death. And it's just like I told someone, I don't want a second season. If anything, they can make a spin-off film, which has happened a couple of times, where you have a film that you can have to wrap up the story, which is probably the cop. I know he ain't dead, because in like my first rule of thumb, if someone doesn't die on screen, they ain't dead. So he'd probably come back to go back and try to get the brother. I'm like, what the hell is going on? He's gonna team up with our lead guy, who is again, and they try to go and take down the organization because these white men need to be dragged down. But they doesn't need a second season. Like, it's just like a one and done and accept it. Move on. There's hundreds of other K dramas. You want another story? Just go watch Alice in Borderland.
I mean, so speaking from my experience, like I am familiar with, like, you know, Asian dramas, anime, and like other, like those kind of series that only have one season, and like that's it. Yep. Even if the stories are open-ended, the only reason I thought like, oh, if there's a second season, it's just because of like there are a lot of open-ended things and people have been talking about a second season. So if the if the creator does not want one, let that man rest. That's fine.
Let the man rest. The man definitely go and create. Exhausted.
He can definitely go and do something else. The fact that it took this long for him to get something, like to get this created, and he had to keep pushing for it, and like studios turned him down and kept turning him down. I'm very happy for him that he has had the success. And if he doesn't want to tell the story anymore, that is perfectly fine.
You brought up something else that I also wanted to mention. So like there was this tweet, the tweet that talked about how the fact he wrote this 2009, no Korean studios wanted it, and a lot that tweet was being sold as this whole he was a suffering artist kind of thing, because it said that he had to sell his laptop. No, what that tweet doesn't clarify is when he had to do that. Did it happen in the same 2009? And the reason I mention this is because he's actually a very successful filmmaker in South Korea. One of his films, The Silence, starring Gong Yoo, is one of the most critically acclaimed South Korean films ever. This film is devastating. It's brilliantly made and brilliantly acted, and it broke my gosh darn heart because it's based on a true story. So like when I saw that tweet, I was like, yes, it's a good story about perseverance, but context is important because he wasn't a suffering artist for very long. He is, as I said, a successful film director in South Korea. He has about 4 or 5 films that he made in between that time, including Silence and one called called Collectors that was released in 2020 and has been showing successfully at film festivals, including Fantasia Fest, which we covered.
Yeah, he's so got about 14 films that he's either been a director, producer, cinematographer, and on screenplays. Yeah, so he's doing just fine. So like when I saw the stories about like, you know, the whole, I don't like when people like want to put on, you know, their own narrative onto things. I looked at that as like, wow, it took that long for like something this great that has entertained so many of us to get picked up. And it's just like, I applaud him for like shopping that script around and getting it done. And it's not so much about like, see, y'all just go and struggle and sacrifice everything and you'll get there too. Cause like you said, like y'all are leaving out the fact that like this man has 14 projects.
He had to sell his laptop, which he shouldn't have had to do, but like that happened. Right. Did that happen early in his career? Like they didn't give context. They're making it seem like this is his first successful venture as a director. I'm like, no, it's not, people. Context. And not only that, when you look at this show, and there's so much historical references in it, like for instance, the red light, green light game that a lot of people have been memeing, which I think is actually distasteful, is like that whole sequence is a commentary on a real event where South Korean citizens were massacred in a tunnel by U.S. troops. That's what that whole scene is referencing. And people are memeing it, turning it into joke and using it as art and set to sell to commodify. And I'm like, that scene is probably why it didn't sell. What that scene and many other references in it is probably why it wasn't accepted when he first pitched it. Because like, for instance, the studios were like, the time you're bringing this, like our audience probably isn't ready for it. Right? So like there's so much nuance and context that a lot of people aren't thinking, because I was talking to him, I'm like, can it be also that what was going on in South Korea at that time, like they were like, this is not the right time for us to be showing something like this on TV.
Right. It could be many things. It could be many things that like, again, that people just, that we, the general public, are not privy to, that we do not have that insight on. Like if that man ever like decides to like, I don't know, who knows, maybe somebody will interview him and like he will share his story.
Better be someone with some common sense and not like some of these journalists who ask the most basic.
I'm sure we'll see. Hopefully that won't be the case. I would be interested to hear more about his experience, like from like getting this made, because I think it's impressive. Like to have created something for so long and to keep working towards getting it created, I can't help but applaud somebody for doing that.
Well, no, for sure. But then again, what a lot of people also don't realize is when it comes to Netflix, like Netflix didn't see the diamond in the rough of this, you know. What Netflix does is they go to all of these different studios all around Asia and they mass acquire scripts. They mass acquire projects. Right? And they like, whichever one becomes a massive success, like this is purely by accident. It's purely fluke that this show has blown up the way it has, because Netflix did what? Zero promotion for it. Zero. They've only sent out, before the show is released, I think like what, 3 tweets?
Yeah, I definitely did not see. I definitely did not see this pop up on like Netflix as like, you know, before it was a top trending show and now it's set to be the highest streamed show of the year.
And that was purely by accident. That was
with 3 months left. That's because like of the traction people, like that's a lot of it is because of how many people were talking about it. That has nothing to do with Netflix pushing it.
At all, like nothing. Yeah. Netflix.
Now they're riding the wave. Now they're riding the wave of it, of just like all the memes and all the stuff. So, anywho,
and then the other thing about it is like, are any of these people that are memeing it, are any of these people talking about it, are they going to watch any other Korean dramas? Are they going to watch any other Korean films? Are they going to go watch any Chinese, Taiwanese, Japanese films? No. What are they doing? They're focusing squarely on Squid Games because this has become a gimmick for them. It's becoming the trending topic. And then once it's no longer trending, once it's no longer popular, they're going to go move on to the next bright, shiny toy.
I honestly, I don't know if I can say it. For the general public, I don't know if I can say that definitely. I think honestly, it could be, I could look at it as an opportunity to open the door for more people to explore Asian dramas, honestly. Just because after my family had watched, I told them like, hey, this is the show I've been watching. And then they're like, oh yeah, this is good. And then I mentioned Alice in Borderlands is good. Now my family's watching that. And then my dad, he had not heard about Parasite. And I was like, you should watch Parasite if you like, you know, if you're looking for more. So like, I've seen like in my own circle of friends and family expanding their reach of watching like more Asian dramas beyond just like, you know, there are the massive hits that people will watch because they're trending and they're very popular and they show up in their feeds. But I am impressed to see that other people are like, this is, you know, it can branch off for some people. I'm not saying the mass majority of people will go and watch other Asian dramas, but I do think it's an opportunity for other folks to go and explore because now it's in the algorithm. Now maybe it'll pop up for a recommendation for them and they'll see more.
But we'll see. I guess we'll see. I am very skeptical and cynical when it comes to American consumerism. And how things are commodified by American audiences. Like, because my experience as someone watching from the outside, I just be like, woohoo. The things that I see happen, I'm just like, yay.
Yeah, I think only time will tell. Like, we could see it happen. We could see if people, like, expand their reach and go and watch more things. Like, what was it that the director of Parasite had even said? Like, you see how, like, I'm paraphrasing, but it was basically the sense of, like, what he had said was...
The one-inch barrier.
Yeah. Wait.
Yeah, that's when he's talking about the subtitles. Don't let subtitles be, like, yes. Like Americans. He was talking about Americans, how especially white Americans are... white people mm-hmm. in particular, they're intimidated by the 1-inch barrier, so they can't be bothered.
Yes, that's what he said.
International films because it's in another language, which I think is so true, but also absurd because like other people from around the world who don't speak English, everything they have to watch that comes out of America or England or Europe is subtitled. Mm-hmm. So like that, like for me, watching subtitled films like coming from back home. Is like standard. Like watch any Chinese and Hong Kong action film is subtitled. Any British, German subtitled. Any like, you know?
Right.
Like, but Americans, they're like, yeah, this is too much work. I'm gonna stick to my plain old regular American dramas, which are like paltry in comparison.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, if people want the 1-inch barrier to stop them from seeing other stories, that's on them. But I would hope that this could actually lead to people's finding more interesting stories and like, you know, these series that, you know, deserve the acclaim that they rightfully deserve. Get it. But I don't have any other thoughts on Squid Game, so we can move on to Midnight Mass.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Midnight Mass is an American supernatural horror streaming television miniseries created and directed by Mike Flanagan, starring Zach Guilford, Kate Siegel, Hamish Linklater, Samantha Linklater, thank you, Samantha Sloyan, Rahul Kohli, and Henry Thomas. So, the plot centers on an isolated island community that experiences supernatural events after the arrival of a mysterious priest. And this is another Netflix property, and I will go into it. So yeah, I will say that I watched this completely on a whim and mainly because Rahul is on it and I love him. I loved him since iZombie. he's so funny and charming, and he did not and he continues to never disappoint. But I will say that I was kind of impressed that like, and I put it on as just like, you know, it's something that I have on while I do my homework, and you know, to like hold my interest, and it's spooky season, why not? Yep. So I started watching it, and I have to say I was very impressed with how much I got into this show, how very quickly, because by like the third episode my mouth dropped. Because, and I say this because, like, I didn't, like, read any premise, and I didn't, like, watch any trailer, I just press play. So I'm really getting into this as like, okay, I just see things as they're being told to me. Like, y'all live on an island that's dying because there was an oil spill and some dude was a drunk driver some years ago and he killed a girl and now he got released from prison. He's going back to the island. Okay, continue the story. So maybe there's drama here. Maybe like midnight mass, church is involved. All right, we keep going. Vampires.
Basically, yeah.
Vampires.
There's a vampire.
Spoilers. Sorry. But like, I will say for me who was not paying attention to certain moments like that, like I did not see the vampire coming in. Like the reveal in episode 3 with the priest, with Monsignor. I was very much...
Which reveal? You mean where he came back, yeah?
So... When in the beginning, when he just shows up and he's the young priest and he's saying like, oh no, your priest is recovering. He was sick and I met him there and he sent me here as his replacement. So not then when he came back young,
oh, yeah.
But the reveal that, oh, the young
that
priest.
Was specifically from young.
Right. Again, me just putting it on. I was just like, oh, I just thought like, oh, he's a vampire. Like by the second episode, I'm like, there's something spooky going on with this one. There's something wrong with that priest. Maybe he's evil or he's satanic or like he's possessed. No, it wasn't that I thought that the vampire made him young. And it was the original priest that came back. And the original priest was like one of God's angels. Revived me and healed me and made me young again. And all I could think about was like, sir, that's a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
That's not God's angel. What?
I'm like, that's a demon you're looking at right there. That ain't no angel. That's a demon.
That's a demon. What? No. And I'm like, I get that you was aging and, you know, you wandered off into the desert, which I have many questions how this old man wandered off into the desert in Jerusalem. By himself, no one looked for him. He just wandered off in the desert in Jerusalem by himself. And he ends up in a cave during a windstorm and a vampire appears. I have many questions, but that by far is him thinking that the vampire was a blessing.
But you see, the thing is, because they said that he had dementia. So like, it's trying to show that he's confused and he's-
Yeah.
Seeing what he wants to see, because he was a devout man of the cloth, because he's Catholic.
He was.
So they're saying that his faith influenced his delusion.
Yes, right? I guess for me, I would have thought when he became younger and the dementia, like what we're supposed to
thought something else with that.
He right when he was younger. It's I think again maybe he was just in denial of that, and it seems like as the series went on, he finally came out of that denial and realized, oh no. I've made a mistake. I've doomed us all.
But, you see, the thing is like, I was discussing this with a friend on Twitter. Like, we were saying, like, is it that we, the audience, knows it as a vampire, but does the culture, the lore, the mythology of vampires even exist in this universe? Because this island is very small, is very isolated.
Yeah.
And, like, they're very, like, it's either extremely devout Catholics or... people who have like completely given up on religion completely.
Right.
And like, yes, there's communication with outside world. They have fairies and all that stuff. And like people even come back. But like, we don't know if because I was wondering, because like no one ever utters the word vampires. Like once they find
out
that his blood burns up in the sun and these things with these fangs are attacking them and people are turning into blood sucking murderers. No one ever clues in and says, vampire?
That's like, an excellent point, because no one ever does say vampire. Everyone looks at this as a blessing. I mean, the church
like,
people,
once they find out something is going on, they're like monsters, creatures, but no one ever makes a reference towards vampire or vampirism.
Right. Which is interesting, because like even as I was watching as the series goes on, because again, spoilers are out, as we mentioned, the vampire walks in the church and I'm like, oh no, you're supposed to burst in flames.
Like, exactly.
Like you, the vampire stood in front of a crucifix. You supposed to burn, but no.
that's the whole thing. So then again, this is about does vampire exist in this mythology, and do the rules that we
not
know,
apply.
Like for instance, like garlic and cross apply to this particular style of vampire, because the way Hallway saw this vampire as a representation of is corrupted religion. So that's what he could afford to walk into church, because like this is a physical symbolism of religion
Yes.
and belief and Christianity corrupted and come and turned into an evil form. And then also I had another thing I was gonna say, just so I forget. And then all and so like because I like tweeted as I was watching. Well, not actually, I made a couple tweets, but like it kind of this whole situation, this show kind of reminded me of this phrase that we have about Homer and Barbados, where we say even the devil know the Bible bad to friend, right? Where did that? Where like you said the devil and demons, like religion don't scare them because the devil came from God. The devil came from heaven. Like they know who God is. They know like who's God's angels are. They know the word of God, so they're not afraid of the Bible. They're not afraid of scripture. They can recite scripture just as, or they can recite scripture better than anyone, right? So they can afford to walk in church because they're like, where did we come from? Like, remember, church is just a building. And I think that's another thing that this film is showing. Like, it's the people who make the church, right? And like, you
No.
people talk about crosses. Like, at home, again, we say, there have three crosses upon Andy Hill. Which one you got? Which one you talking about? You don't know which you don't which cross you're wearing could be. You don't know if that's Jesus or the other two thieves.
And I think I agree with you because, and I think that's an excellent point about the vampire representing a corruption in the church, because as we can clearly see, there are hints of corruption from one of the members who, there's like the rumor of like embezzlement and like what happened with the money from the oil spill, and then like her whole thing altogether. What was it, Jen, or what was her name?
Beverly,
Be
Beverly Hills,
Beverly, Beverly, that's
Bev.
right. Bev. I knew it was like a one syllable name that annoys me. Beverly, but Bev. It was just like, her especially, because you know how like when they had like the stu they had the parents meeting or like the community meeting at the school, and they were talking because like she was handing out Bibles to the students, and like some of the parents were like, no, I don't want you teaching my children about religion. And she just kept on reframing it as like, well, if your children are asking about the miracles happening on this island, it's my duty as a teacher to teach them that, like, it would be wrong of me to withhold them. And again, I love Rahul's character because he's a sheriff, and him and his son are Muslim, and like you can very much tell that obviously the racism is very blatant with Bev, and she's just like, well, just because your son doesn't know about Jesus, and she's like, no, actually, and he's like, no, actually, we as Muslims, we know who Jesus is. We love Jesus. We respect him. However, and it comes back to like, we don't want you to teach our children about the Bible, Bev, because it's very clear that she is corrupt, and she's definitely a force of corruption in the church, and leading it. And it's just, I think that's a it was just like the stuff with the Monsignor, with the new, him being the young priest again, and all of that. Like, that stuff was wild. Like the sermons and everything. Like, I think I would like to rewatch some of the scenes again, and even have a Bible and like reference some of the scriptures, because like my first thought of like when he showed up, I'm like, false prophet. Like that, the theme of a false prophet in a church, of like somebody who's come and like they're going to preach a good word and like perform miracles to these people, and like he gives them hope and everything, but actually he is a false prophet. And I think that character is interesting in a sense, because like that fits him up to a certain point. Because it's not that, like you said, it's not that he was so much doing this with ill intentions. I don't think he did all everything he did with ill intentions, because he thought he was giving a gift to his members. But then again, that just makes me question, like, if you thought you was giving a gift to your members, why did you do it in secret in the very beginning?
Exactly.
Sure
Like,
gave people
you say,
blood.
well, everything done in the dark gonna come to the light. And if you for the
Right.
time you gotta be doing it in the dark, clearly ain't all up to date. But you said like the thing with false prophets is like they also believe they know what they're doing is wrong, but they wholeheartedly believe that what they're doing is still right, because they believe that they have the they've been blessed by God to do these
Yes.
things, that they have the will of God. Like Bab, like she believed that she was loved by God more than anyone else,
Yep.
right? And like Like you're talking about the thing of God, but doesn't the Bible say that God loves everyone equally? How do you think that that God values more than anyone else because you believe you're so that every action you do is so good and in the will of God? Like, you poison this man's dog, like,
right.
That's evil. Like, you're being racist towards his son and his son. That's not of God.
Mm-mm.
Right? You're belittling people and you're judging people. That's not of God either. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. And another thing that this show, I think, is talking about, because I think it does do a really good job of drawing analogies to how the church is corrupted and how the mm-hmm. church, a lot of people use the pulpit and the word of God and
yes.
religion
yes.
to as weapons against people. And it does a brilliant job with that. And Bevis, I think, a very good example of that. And then the Monsignor is another example of the earnest fool who thinks that they're so earnest in their belief and they're so earnest in like doing God's work,
yeah,
that they're leading
yeah.
the flock astray and they're not checking the wolves that are they getting ready to like attack the sheep, right?
Right.
And so he's a misguided shepherd. And mm-hmm. but then my problem with the show is the pacing to me is so slow. And so much of the dialogue is
yeah.
like a sermon. Like, if you're familiar with church, you can tell that a lot of the dialogue is structured like sermons.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't take that. I'm like, yo, I spent my whole life in church, like hearing like so many monologues, which are like sermons in one episode, like in one, almost everyone speaks in like a sermon. And that's so much to take in. And it was dragging. I'm like, oh my.
Yeah.
My favorite one was the one by Erin, where she talks about death.
Yes,
like,
I do like
that
was a monologue. It was
like, that was beautiful,
like, and how it was like, and how it got carried out towards the end, like how we see that moment again, and how she describes. I'm like, now, like that's how you do a monologue. But like, yeah, mm-hmm. that's why I felt like if it wasn't for the reveal by episode 3, I think I would have put this show to the side. Granted, I was definitely
yeah.
here for Hassan, but. Because I was intrigued to see, like, okay, what's going on? Because there is a certain level of mystery and, like, you know, you like supernatural gets my attention. So I'm like, okay, I want to know what's happening. But I was definitely, I felt like in the moments that dragged, I would have been like, oh, I can't do this. So I think mm-hmm. they made the reveals at the right moment for me to keep watching. Because the reveals where they're placed, that is what helped with the show. But if they were not there and if they were not as good, then I probably would have just been like, okay, nah, I'm gonna opt out of this. But yeah, I mean, overall, I liked it. I think I liked a lot of the cast performances. I mean, like I said, Hassan is my favorite. Like, he has some of my, like, I think Rahul gives some of the best performances in every scene he's in, especially the scene where he is, like, basically describing why he feels like he can't go and, like, you know, go up against the church. And, like, given that the fact that he is a sheriff, just one mm-hmm. sheriff in this dying island, and you have this entire town that treats him like he is still an outsider and no one treats him, like, with a welcoming, like, love of a neighbor. So it's mm-hmm. just like, given like, and he gives like his entire background, like, we don't get an episode where we see it, but like him just telling that story, I think, is like captivating in itself. But I would tell people to go ahead and watch it, give it a watch. Hope we didn't spoil too much of it for y'all. We didn't
yeah,
talk about the
slow.
Ending
it's
but it's
slow.
A slow
no we didn't spoil the ending at all, which I think to me episode 7 was my favorite episode
mm.
out of the entire show. He really, the pace for definitely increased, and a lot of mm-hmm. story elements came together in episode 7. You had a lot
yeah.
of the best performances in episode 7. So that was really, because I don't think anything we discussed had anything to do with episode 7, so you're in for a surprise. I
mm-hmm.
just caution, it is slow pacing. It is a slow pace. So
yeah, watch this one
for that, but it's a really good show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like,
and
watch
the cinematography
this one.
Is very good.
Oh yes, cinematography is great. I was just about to say, like, yeah, watch this one on like a rainy day and you ain't got nowhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, enjoy the slow burn. And
yep.
And like, you know, enjoy the vampire just in a priest robe. I'm sorry, that imagery for me.
That's not something you see very often.
I did not see that very often. And I'm very glad you make that point, because like, I have been scratching my head. I'm like, how does this vampire work? Because the cross didn't burn it. and the church didn't burn it. How does it work? Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is a special kind of vampire.
And the way how it ends, there's actually, the ending is actually open-ended, because you think it's mm-hmm. ended, but then there's something that happens, and you're like, wait, did it make it?
Mm-hmm.
Did it die? Which I think is another allegory of how when you talk about corrupted word spreading, you just need one flicker, one thing to go on. So I hope it died. I'm like, I hope you drowned.
I hope it drowned. I hope it got sunk down, but it definitely drank enough blood to maybe heal itself and flap up again.
I think she should have stabbed it. Because she was just cutting the wings. I think she should have stabbed it.
I was wondering why, you wasting your time, with the little bit of strength you have left while it drains you, stab him in the heart.
Pull it down and just gut it. That's what she could have done, because she was in the right position. I'm like, why didn't you stab it?
Yes, and it, oh my God, sorry. This was just another thing. The thing about the vampire that just made my skin crawl is just how intimately it would hold the head of its victim. It just made me so.
I'm making out with him.
I know, it's just how it almost stroking it and.
Which again, I kind of get, because again, a corrupted word is seductive too, right?
Mm. Look at you dropping gems. Yes,
right. I like that. See, all my years in church has paid off.
Look at you. But those are it for the.
You know what? I just had an idea. Maybe we should. I'll see if we can get the director to be a guest on the podcast, and not in October.
Oh, that would be amazing. I would love that.
I'm gonna try to do that for us.
Mm-hmm.
So we're almost wrapping up.
Yes,
our last show.
Mm-hmm. This was one of yours.
My pick. Mm-hmm. Yes, this one is a Taiwanese drama called Detention, mm-hmm. and it is based on a video game of the same name. Ooh. And also today, I think it was announced that they're releasing a film based on the game as well, starring King Go Wong, who is also in a film that I watched for TIFF called The Falls. But Detention is a supernatural thriller drama, and it starts at Greenwood High School in the 1990s, where Yong Xiang Lu, a transfer student, steps into the forbidden area on the campus by accident, where she encounters the ghost of Ru Xiang Fang. Fang later unveils the hidden history and trauma over the past 30 years and how a group of young students and teachers were persecuted as they fought for freedom in the era of censorship. Their stories keep coming back to the school like haunting nightmares waiting to be told and revealed. So I started this one this week, and it's really intriguing. It's it's not one of those dramas where it's flash. It's not flash, you're super exciting, but the story and acting is really good. Where the lead character, Liu Yongxiang, played by Li Lingwei, and then there's Fang Wuxian, played by Han Ning, and then the male lead character is Cheng Wanliang, played by Huang Guangxi. I think they're really good. They're all students, so they're young, and you have these two. One is a ghost. I'm not spoiling anything, because if you're familiar with the game, that's what it is. So you have mm-hmm. one is a ghost, one is a girl. She's trying to possess Xiang Liu, and she's like, I want you to do these things for me. And Xiang Liu is like, I ain't about that. But the way how this show is coming together is that it's showing parallels between the past and the present. Mm-hmm. And then caught up in between this is these two girls, and then there's this young male student, which again is Wen Liang, and he is interesting because this is something you also don't see very often in Asian dramas, because sometimes you see shamans.
Mm-hmm.
And his family is a family of shamans. He's passed down generation to generation. He's the youngest one. But again, it's not very often you see male shamans, one, and it's not very often you see young male shamans. And actually, the first time I saw a male shaman that I can remember was in when I watched The Wailing, which is a South Korean film early this year, summer. So to see this happening in this drama, and then there's another drama I'm watching. It's also another school setting, South Korean drama, where you have a female shaman, but then there's this male student who is able to see ghosts.
Okay.
And he's able to interact with them. So again, this is something you don't see very often in Asian dramas, where you have the males who are in touch with the spiritual realm. Usually that's something for female characters. So it's interesting. I'm actually watching two two shows at the same time with us with the same kind of characterizations. But this one is really interesting. It kind of has like political commentary because it's talking about the political history of Taiwan and the age of censorship. And so you're watching how like the past affects present. You're watching how the past affects like students and young people. And you know, like people say, oh, like this happened 30 years ago and like this has nothing to do with the younger generation. They're showing you like, yeah, no, it still affects the younger generation because a lot of the things that the adults went through when they were young affects the way they treat the students now, right? So it's really interesting. This one is also on Netflix. I can't wait to see how it ends because I'm wondering, like, will the three of them band together to like fight against the corrupt teachers, or will it have to be the two students, Yun Xiang and Wang Liang, who have to fight against Fang Ruxian? So like, I don't know where it's gonna go. It's really interesting, and I think the special effects, especially for how they transition from present to past, because like the worlds can like collide. So you can have like them existing in the ghost realm,
okay,
at the same time as existing in the present. So like the way how they do those transitions is really interesting. So I think they did I think they're doing a really good job of that aspect. It's like it came out in 2020, but I think it only got onto Netflix recently. So I think only got onto Netflix, I think earlier this year. It was on my watch list, so that's why I started it, because I had it on my watch list, and I'm like, let me watch this because it's October, and so far so good.
Okay. Well, I'm interested because, you know, I like anything with the supernatural involved, especially like if there's, I don't know. I mean, like, 'tis the season, but also regularly, especially when it's like you throw in school age children and seeing ghosts, I'm most likely going to watch it because I'd be like, ooh, let's see, especially if it's like a mystery.
It has very much of an anime feel, which again makes sense because it's based on a video game. So it's interesting to have something like this made as a video game first, instead of like the live action and then a video game adaptation of it. And if this is based on a video game, I think this is actually a really good adaptation of a video game, because like I can kind of see how it would work as a video game, where if you are like the person playing this avatar, it's like you have to do these tasks, and you know that there's things that they have to find to connect with the ghost realm, and like tasks that the ghost makes her do. So I can see how that works as a game, but then it's also its own thing as well. So like, I think I would like to see what your thoughts are as a manga fan and also someone who plays video games.
I will definitely give it a watch, because it definitely reminds me of this series called Renni, and it's similar. I'm not gonna say it's too similar, but it's like a girl. There's a boy student who can see ghosts, and he basically can't. He offers a service to, like, he uses his powers to help people. But then there's also a girl who gains the power to see ghosts also after an accident that happened with her. So it's like they help spirits that are lingering around the school pass on to the next stage of reincarnation. So I was just like, this is giving me vibes of, like, you know, I mean, I love this kind of stuff, so I will definitely give it a try, especially if I can find that game. I would like to play that too.
I'm here looking it up. So the name of the game is Detention as well. Okay. And it's produced by Red Candle. So it's made, created by Red Candle Games. And there's actually another film, a 2019 film. So there's a 2019 film, then there's a 2022 drama. Now we have a 2021 film. So I'm not sure if the new film is a continuation of the original film, or if they just like, we just redid the whole story and it's made by a different studio. That one would be interesting because who is this one by? I'm looking to see who the new film is by. It's by
and I can get it on the Mac, so I'm in business. I will definitely get to try.
Arising US theaters and on VOD October 8th. So I'm wondering if this is actually the 2019 film that they're just releasing in American studios now. American theaters now. It is. So it's not a new film. It's a 2019 film that is not being released to American theaters and on VOD in America.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Well, so I'm it's just the one film and the one drama.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to checking that out. I think it is very fitting for the tis the season of spooky season. So thank you for sharing. As usual, you come in hot with the great dramas, especially. But before we head out, is there anything else that you would like to share? Anything upcoming on your end for our audience?
Let me see. Like we talked about the things that I covered for TIFF before. Mm-hmm. And so I've done a couple of interviews that were published after that. So you can go read those interviews. One was with the director Loners. I released a new episode of Beyond the Romax. That's my drama podcast. I did talk about Squid Games there, but I also talked about Hometown Cha Cha Cha. Yumi Sal, that's one that we will go into for our next episode, because I think I don't know if you read the webtoon for Yumi Sal, but this one's a really fun live action adaptation of a webtoon, which I intend
Yumi Sal? You said Yumi Sal's?
Yeah.
Oh my god, yeah, yes, Sal. I have read the webtoons for this one.
So you have to watch it. It's on Viki. So like they're doing the live action adaptation. It's showing. It started only like a few weeks ago. And it's on Viki, and it's so good. It's so funny. I love the cells. The cells are hilarious. Like, I think Naughty and Hunger and Detective. No, Naughty Sensibility and Hunger are my favorite cells so far. They're hilarious. I want the dolls. I hope they make dolls of the cells. They're so funny.
You know, I hope they do too. You know, I feel like we need to have like a webtoon to like live action. Like episode or something. Like, I don't know. We could just talk about Yumi Sales next time, because I am excited to talk about that with somebody. So I'm gonna watch it on Viki. So,
we can cover it at the end of October, because it's so, so good. I'm actually gonna start reading the webtoons, and I know I'm gonna have so much to catch on, because it's like 5 years worth, because it's starting in 2015 to 2020. Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's a lot. That's
You'll
a
be
lot.
Surprised.
And they're doing a part two. And there's a sequel, but it's not about Yumi Sales, but it's right. It's characters, but in the same universe. Mm-hmm. So someone told me about it. I'm gonna start watching that. So I'm gonna try to watch it as it's happening now. So instead of me catching up 5 years later, I'm gonna try to watch it as the stories are being published. Mm-hmm. So yes, I can't remember the name. I'll let you know what the name is. But yeah, we can talk about that one in our October episode for sure.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to it. As for me, like I said, I'm taking a bit of a break from like writing reviews right now, just with school. But you know, I still love to get in my manga and anime, so I might have some things coming up soon. Like, I know the new My Hero Academia movie is coming out, so I'm very excited about getting the opportunity to watch that and then talk about that in great detail over on Did You Have To, the anime podcast that I do with Kate. And, you know, I'm sure there'll be other things that come up that I will be happy to share with y'all. But in closing, I do want to remind y'all again that we have all throughout the month of October, we at like podcasters like me and Carolyn are helping to raise money for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital with St. Jude Play Live. So if y'all would be so kind, please go to stjude.org/ but why though? You can learn all about it. You can see the rewards that we get, if like not we get the rewards that you get when you get us to certain goals. So again, if you get to three, if we get to $3,000, I have to eat a candy corn pizza. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I will have many regrets in my life, but I'm doing it for the children.
For the kids.
So I won't regret it for doing it for the children. But anyways, again, that is stjude.org/ but why though. Please go over there, donate if you can, spread the word, help us reach our goal of $5,000 this year. And mm-hmm. with that, y'all can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Nisha Plays. I have some cosplays coming up, so y'all keep an eye out for that, because spooky season. And yeah, what about you, Carolyn? Where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Carrie Sanich 12, that's CRRIECNH12. You can find my most recent published work, new YouTube videos, new interviews, whatever, usually in my pinned tweets. And then you can find my YouTube channel under my name, Carolyn Hines, that's CRolynHinds on YouTube. And I think that's it. I'll be taking a kind of sort of big mini break in October. I'll still be on social media, but for like then I won't be doing as much work as I have been because I'll be taking a break for health reasons, but I might still be doing a couple live tweets, you know, like for Yumi Saw, because I just love that drama. It's so funny. And I've been live tweeting Hometown Cha Cha Cha. So I've been using hashtag dramas with Carrie. Go follow that hashtag. See what dramas I'm talking about. Also, the Saturday Night Sci-Fi hashtag for the films and the TV shows that we live tweet every Saturday night. At 10 p.m. Eastern. Those are fun. Those are great. You can join in. The last one we did recently was for Star Wars Visions, which I love. My favorite episodes were
That's right.
the my favorite episodes were the duel, which is the first one, and then episode 4, which I think was called The Ninth Jedi.
Yes, Ninth Jedi and Twins.
And yes, and Village Bride.
Oh my God, I love Village Brides so much. They're so,
Yeah. There's
oh, I
one
just.
scene there. Where the scene where she crouches down and lights up the saber. I think that scene was so cool. It's so simple, but it's so
It's
cool.
so
I just
good.
love that. Like,
I
it was
can't
so
believe I
good.
almost forgot to talk about it. You know, this again will be something we can cover in another episode because we have kept y'all here long enough. But yes, go watch that also. But
Yes,
yeah.
that's on Disney Plus.
Yes, on Disney Plus. But y'all take care and go donate at stjude.org/ but why though? Bye.
Yay! Make Misha eat candy corn. Bye. No.